Great. Okay, I'm not going to go over in advance what I want to talk to you
about.
That's
fine.
Good. Okay, so we'll just start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to do the introduction live.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just start with the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When the tape is rolling. Okay. I think most of our listeners are familiar with Morning Edition. Weekend Edition is similar to but different from Morning Edition. What are the differences?
Well, I should explain that I'm one of the creators. I'm basically the creator of Morning Edition. And last summer, when we were asked to come up with a new show, Scott and I, we knew we had to create the sixth day of Morning Edition. Morning Edition, as you know, is a Monday through Friday show. So on Saturday morning, it would be the logical sixth day. But my feeling was that I love Morning Edition. I was there from the beginning. But I was never convinced, I am not convinced that if you put exactly what Morning Edition does on Saturday morning, people would listen to it. And I think when the entire public radio system, the 300 stations, said last year, yes, come up with a Saturday morning show that would do what Morning Edition and All Things Considered do for the system, which is to say provides news and gets a nice audience, I'm not sure what we were going to do. I knew it was a sixth day. And then I listened very carefully to what we were doing, and I thought, no, Morning Edition has become a primary source of news. Morning Edition sets the agenda for the day. The conceit of Morning Edition, I suppose, is that if you are an informed citizen, if you are an interested person, if you listen to Morning Edition, you will understand what people around the world are thinking about today, what they are going to act upon today, what issues, what ideas in international affairs and the arts and sciences are going to be discussed today. And in its pacing and in its presentation, Morning Edition, I think, does that very, very well. All Things Considered, for instance, I think, holds up an audio mirror at the end of the day and says, okay, America, here's what you sounded like today. Here's what you did today. Here's what happened in the world today. Then comes Saturday morning, I thought, what would I want to hear Saturday morning? Okay, I'm a public radio listener. I am. I'm not only a producer, but I listen to public radio more than any other media. You know, except for Little Dynasty and, you know, Cosby Show. That's it. I listen to public radio all the time. And I thought, well, what would make sense? Well, and I thought, well, a show in a home setting, what are the weekend concerns? Well, it's home and family. And sure, you have an interest in sciences and there's an interest in business, but it's sort of a personal business. And what are people going to be doing while the show is on the air? People are going to be doing errands and they're going to be with families. And when you're with a family, for the most part, that's going to be a very positive time. That's a very, I mean, that's a time when, you know, in theory, I don't want to sound like a pop psychologist, but, you know, there's time for growth and there's time to be happy and there's time for positive things to happen. And somehow, I think when your listeners hear Weekend Edition, it reflects that. I mean, Scott has very, very specific ideas about the show being a reflection not only of what news has occurred, but people's hopes and their dreams and their desires, which also becomes news, but usually just doesn't make it on the page or make it on the air.
So just as on the weekend you try to be less obsessive about what do I have to do and what's happening in the news, the Weekend Edition is going to be less obsessive about what's happening and more reflective about what's happening and what's happened and maybe more entertainment in it too.
I think everything we do is entertaining. It's more curious, I suppose. I suppose the weekend is a time when you can step back and say, wait a minute, what did that mean? What happened? What was that all about? And in fact, many times at NPR, we just really haven't done the piece which says, what happened this week? We may do what happened yesterday or what happened last night. But this is a show where we can say, wait a minute, put that story in a context. The shuttle explosion, I can't make sense of that. Help me make sense of that. So the show, in a way, steps back and says, I've said to reporters, what I want is not just what happened last night, but tell me what happened Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then how that fit into what happened last night.
The weekends are an interesting time in broadcasting. On radio, it's traditionally been a time when the stations trot out their public service shows that they know no one's going to listen to. And on TV, you've got wrestling and cartoons and Western movies, if you're lucky.
Well, I think Smurfs is probably our biggest competition. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're coming along at a very good time. There really is not a lot there on television.
But Common Wisdom would say there's not a lot there on radio or TV in the weekends for a good reason, because no one's paying attention.
It's a huge audience. In fact, in developing the show, we studied the figures, and yes, in public radio, there are lots of figures to look at, and there is a huge audience Saturday morning. Saturday morning is a prime time in radio and in public radio. The potential audience there is huge. There are millions. I can give you the station airs a Prairie Home Companion. Well, I can tell you how I thought about Scott and the show. I think people in public radio know, people listening to public radio know that Garrison's on Saturday night. I want them to also think that Saturdays is Scott in the morning, Garrison in the afternoon. Garrison is erudite. He writes for The New Yorker. He's got a great imagination. He's great to listen to. Scott does all those things. He's great to listen to, erudite. He writes for The New Yorker. What Scott does not do is sing. But I feel if listeners tune in early in the morning to public radio and they hear Scott on Saturday morning, and then stay with the station the rest of the day. Sometimes they may have to turn off to an errand, but then they turn the station on again. There's Garrison.
Your background in public radio started out in the arts and not in news. And
you are giving away the biggest, my biggest secret in public radio. Yes, yeah.
And there has always been an emphasis on the arts in the news shows that you've produced. Obviously, you think that they're compatible, that arts belong on a new show.
It's even more than belong. I mean, you're asking me certainly a very valid question. I am not thought of at NPR as a news person. I am thought of as the person who has created Morning Edition and does a news show. But people in public radio, I mean, people at NPR, know that I feel that news basically represents people's worst behavior. News is about people who kill each other and people who do not trust each other and people who lie and people who hurt each other. And I know that that does represent the life of a country. But equally, the arts represents, it's not a matter of even getting in the arts or the arts is like the entertainment portion or the arts is the icing on the cake. People in America throughout the day, they think about news, but what's going through their heads? People constantly think about melodies. People constantly think about movie situations, think about dramatic situations. People have real lives, and people have fantasy lives. People walk around looking at the world, and also they look at the world the way they would want to see it. Well, that's what the artists in America do. Artists in America represent the fantasy life, the imaginative life. That is just as valid as a part of a life, and to leave that out, you are leaving out what America is, what people think about.
Has your arts orientation affected how you think news should be covered?
Yeah, I think news should be understandable. I think if you read the works of any great artist, or you read biographies, or what any entertainer, what any performer, what any artist usually says is, after years and years of doing it, I knew that I had to get rid of the garbage. I had to get rid of the nonsense. I just had to make what I do simple, so my message can be communicated to an audience very simply. And that's what artists and singers do. They pare it down to the essence of what it is. They clear away the clutter. And I think I think an arts point of view brings that to the news, because there's a lot of news which is very, very confusing. And you can use many kinds of sounds to tell stories and all sorts of music and anything, but that may not serve the message. That may not serve the truth. That may not serve journalism. And the lessons of the arts, I think, we apply every day in public radio to news presentation.
You had a real trial by fire on a news show. As soon as you started doing Morning Edition, the Iranian hostage story broke. And
yeah, Morning
Edition. That was really, I mean, how did you deal with that? You weren't used to running a news show, and here, like, the biggest story that had hit in years broke.
See, Morning Edition went on the 5th, November 5th, 1979, and the hostage crisis was the 4th. It was the 9th, 4th. Well, of course, if you listen back to those first days, and Jackie Judd, who's now with CBS News nationally, was the newscaster. That's where that story was handled. We did not know initially how big a story that was. It was really just in the newscast that first day. Then immediately it became. But it wasn't a matter of, no, I cannot name you the members of the Likud party. I try to remember all the Central American countries, but I've even forgot the not a device. Never.
We can touch you on the capitals of each of the countries.
But I cannot do that. But I am very, very curious, and that curiosity has informed many NPR programs over the years. I mean, I've been at NPR. It'll be 13 years this July, and I am surrounded by people who know all that information. I mean, that's the chance that NPR took on someone like me. They like my curiosity, and so that first day, I thought. I mean, I really can't tell you what I thought, but knowing how I think, I know there were hundreds and hundreds of questions. So I don't approach things as, well, here's the history of Iran, the history of Iraq, the history of the Gulf, etc. I approach it from, what had we just done to the Shah? Wait a minute, the Shah was in the States. What is our relationship to the Shah? Who is this Ayatollah? How many people did we have there? What was their purpose there? I mean, immediately questions start. And in a way, it serves the programs because there are many editors who know a lot. And you can always presume that the audience knows everything. Well, a public radio audience is a very smart audience. The audience knows a lot. And yet you can't know everything. You can't, you know, when we place a piece in this order, South Africa, Lebanon, Guatemala, and we mention different parties and we mention different movements, that's very, very difficult to make sense of. I mean, it's very difficult to keep the ANCs and all the different letters and all the different parties straight and understandable. And I think that's, someone like me, that's what I do. I say to a reporter, wait a minute, I'm 2 minutes into this story, I don't know what you're talking about here. And I'm always the naive listener. I'm always the advocate for the listener.
That's an interesting posture to take because a lot of times people are uncomfortable admitting they don't know something or admitting that something isn't clear. No, really.
My career at NPR, except for the arts, and really in the arts too, has been me saying, I don't understand this. Please explain this to me. And I feel that's the – I mean – also, it's easy for me because I've been there a long time. I have been in any job situation. You go through the humiliations, the pains, the ego, when the ego is squashed. I mean, for me, all the people in public radio know it. I mean, the people at NPR, they know it. They know what I know. They know what I don't know. So when I ask a question, it's not like, oh, Jay doesn't know this. It's like he doesn't know a lot of things. I just ask it because I feel that's what I'm being paid to do. I feel that's my job. And I'm there long enough, so I know I see it in the morning editorial meetings. A new staff member, a new editor may come aboard, and here I am asking these questions, and like, this guy doesn't know this? Why did they hire him? And eventually they get what I do. And I must tell you, it's nurtured, it's fostered there. It's not that people say, Jay, stay dumb. I try to learn things. I try to understand. I read the front page. It's just I don't read the front page first. I open up the art section first.
My guest is Jay Kernis, and he's the executive producer of a new show that will premiere in March, Saturdays beginning at 8 o'clock, and it's called Weekend Edition, and it's kind of like the sixth day of Morning Edition, and Jay used to produce Morning Edition. Now, you've devised a couple of formats that really challenge a lot of what the experts tell you is true about radio listening, and I'm talking about the Morning Edition and the Weekend Edition formats. There's all kinds of experts to tell you, like, how long the American attention span is and how people listen to radio. What are some of the common words of wisdom that you think you've proved to be false in the formats that you've created?
I think, well, you begin there, the idea that people only listen for 5 or 20 minutes. But I must tell you, I took a lot of that information seriously. Morning Edition and now Weekend Edition is designed so that if you only can give us 5 or 20 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes, you'll get something. Although I'd love people to listen to an hour or 2 hours, it's very unlikely that most people in the audience will. So where a lot of people in all news radio, for instance, would say, oh, no, every 20 minutes you just repeat the news over and over again, just give the headlines over and over again. We know through the Morning Edition and All Things Considered experience that, yes, the public radio listener will stay with us longer. I think the biggest thing is, and I know this will come out sounding a little funny and either elitist or condescending or one of those words. I respect the audience, and I think the audience has a lot of intelligence. And a number of people have left public radio and have gone to the CBS Morning News, have gone to NBC with American Almanac. And they talk with us all the time, and they just because they're making, nice big salaries and, have when you work for a television network, all of your clothing, except for, I think, for the underwear, has a logo on it. You can dress entirely in logo clothing with big N's. And
you're probably deducted from your taxes, too.
Well, the people who have gone to the network say, you know, if it weren't for the money, I wish I could go back to NPR, because now they have mortgages and so they're locked into it. But the freedom is not there, and the intelligence just is not there. And plenty of times we bring up stories that we would have done on ATC or Morning Edition, and the producers say, hey, you know, they're not going to get this. The television audience does not want this. And I think there are plenty of people who program radio that way. I mean, look, what most radio in the United States is rock and roll and is very, very simple. And I think complex things have to be made simple, but I think... you know, Elaine May and Mike Nichols used to say when they were on stage, if we've read the book, the audience has read the book. Now, I don't think that's always true, but I think the audience is aware that reading exists as a pastime in America or as something to do in America. I mean, I think our audience does read, and you use that when you create a show.
I assume you grew up listening to AM radio. Do you think that you've learned much by listening to tightly formatted AM rock and roll radio, the kind of stuff that you grew up with?
Oh, sure. And I had examined that because when I first got into public radio and I had also gone to college and been in college rock and roll radio and experimented with things that I listened to as a teenager, people in public radio said, oh, we don't do that here. And I said, wait a minute, there's got to be some things that work. I mean, millions and millions of people listen to commercial radio for a certain reason. And yes, there are production techniques. There are tape editing techniques. There are techniques which stick by the rules of whatever good entertainment, good show business is. And when you're at the typewriter, when you're in the field, when you're talking with newsmakers, yeah, that is journalism. When you're on the air, that is show business. There are elements, of course it's journalism, but there are elements of show business which are very, very important. And commercial AM radio did them very, very well, which is to say, don't let your audience get bored. If it isn't interesting, the audience is not going to listen to it. It doesn't have to be fast, 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 fast. But there is something called pacing. There is something called flow. There is something called listenability. And those things, I think, I've never lost those lessons, and I don't think that commercial radio is a dirty word.
Morning Edition and Weekend Edition are live shows. They have pre-taped components to them, but the hosts are there live,
you bet.
Some of the interviews are done live. Live radio is really exciting and so on and so on, but there's also always mistakes in it. People stumble over words, people cough and sneeze.
Mm-hmm.
Does it upset you a lot when one of the errors happens live on the air?
I would... yeah, I will tell you what I do when I hear a really bad error. I mean, little errors, you know. I mean, in the early days of a show, you really want things to be perfect and you really want to please an audience. But there are mistakes on the air. And I am told that normally what I do when a terrible mistake happens is I sort of lie down. I lie down and I sort of bang the floor a little and try not to raise my voice. I'm told that it doesn't look very mature. People have wondered, but I know I can remember one time specifically on Morning Edition when an outtake of Bob's got onto the air. And apparently I just hit the ground. I wasn't in the studio. In the hallway outside, they said, no, no, no. But that's because when you are a producer, you pray over the host and you pray over the tape machines. And you – I mean, if I were on the other side of the glass right now as your producer, I would be breathing with you and hoping that this guest has something interesting to say. And, you know, I can't gauge it now as being a guest. I can't gauge if this is thoroughly terrible or interesting or not. I mean, I'm trying to be interesting. But as the producer is behind the glass saying, oh, Terry, you know, really. And I'm in there. When Scott is behind the glass and I'm there, I breathe. And on difficult moments of the show, I hold my breath and I look at a script and I think, will he be able to read this? Will this make sense to him when it goes into the studio?
What are you telling him on the headphones?
Oh, I stay out of the studio. We have the best.
You don't talk to him on the headphones?
Best director in the business named Cindy Carpian, who directed Morning Edition for years. And I found that my work exists outside the studio when it's on live. That he and I, there are sometimes during a live interview, I will just look at him. I'll walk in and just give him a look. Now, on a pre-taped interview, when we're going to have a very difficult production piece, I may have an extra question for him. Or I may have an extra piece of information because we've done the research together, et cetera. But normally when the show's on the air, I stay away from the studio.
So that's one of the things about live radio is that you sometimes have to take a shoe off and pound the floor. And
No, my fist.
With your fist, okay.
Yeah.
But what do you love about it? You must love stuff about live radio, too.
you can't cheat the audience. Mm-hmm. You're there. I can, on tape, I can do anything. I can have music come in. I can clean up the words. But knowing you're live is direct communication, and that's very exciting.
You cover Capitol Hill a lot, especially on Morning Edition, mm-hmm. probably on Weekend Edition, too. Now, they are also your hidden underwriters because the Congress approves money for the CPB, and the CPB sends money to NPR. And in a way, the fate of public radio...
I must tell you, you don't think about it. I know I get asked the question a lot. It is a valid question. The same question can be asked of underwriters. You know, I know that there's this wonderful couple named Jennifer and Ted Stanley. I know, you know, AT&T, et cetera. The insulation is I am so insulated from the Hill.
None of the congressmen ever try to intimidate you a little bit and talk about a vote that's coming up.
Oh, never. No, never. Uh-huh. Even the congressmen who come in, they don't want to talk about the votes. They want to talk about either the latest news or something funny, or when they're backstage with us, they're real people and what's ever happening in the news is what they want to discuss. Even in the situation, I've been to one or two Hill receptions. Nobody would mention it because I think they also want to protect us from that kind of influence.
I've heard complaints about NPR that it's too far to the left and it's too far to the right. how do you find the commentators for the morning shows that you've done and that you do that balance each other out? You
know, well, we always have a balance. I mean, we always make sure that moderate is balanced with conservative, is balanced with and we do it by the numbers. In fact, we do Congress people by the numbers. We're always adding them up and saying, looks like we've had too many Republicans on, and let's get some Democrats on. I must tell you, though, when you bring up commentators, what comes to mind most is something I've been thinking of lately. I'll bring it up. Some are incredible, like a Tom Shales, a Frank DeFord, a Rod McLeish. Those people can do it year after year after year. Some commentators you find have 10 things to say, and to say well. And what you really should do is take them off the air and say, go live, go think, come back in a couple of months and give us 10 more things. And that's sort of out of sequence. But that's more of a problem I have with commentators than being left or right. Or
mm-hmm.
Also, I think people on the air should always surprise you. You shouldn't hear the name and the topic and know because of a political bent this is what he or she is going to say. I think you should always be surprised. Now, in Weekend Edition, we don't have commentators. We don't have people reading from pieces of paper, reading 2 minutes of copy. We have people who talk with Scott, and it's a different approach. It's more conversational, and I think it's more personal.
My guest is Jay Kernis, and he produces the new show Weekend Edition that we'll be featuring beginning in March. It's Saturdays at 8 till 10 o'clock in the mornings, and it's more or less like a sixth day of Morning Edition, except the show's considerably different, as Jay described a few minutes ago. You kind of grew up at NPR as an adult.
That's true. There are people who would question that and say, hey, we're still waiting, but I have an enormous fantasy life, as I've said probably. But I grew up in public radio. I started in public radio when I was 16 years old at a station which is no longer there, WRVR in New York.
You are probably, if you wanted to, you'd be eminently hireable by a big commercial radio or television network.
I suppose.
Now, if you had started, do you think, pursuing that, do you think you would have had the quote sensibility for it? I mean, now you're a kind of proven producer and everything. Your credentials are...
No, I'll tell you why I got to be this way. Thank you, if it's a compliment. Because I don't have a voice. In commercial radio, you've got to have a big, deep commercial voice. And my college radio station, University of Maryland College Park, 20742, we experimented with a lot of rock radio, and you really needed a big voice. At the same time, summers and vacations, I was going to work at this public radio station, which is no longer there. And at the moment of graduation, I had the choice. Would I go and do production work in rock and roll radio, or would I go and stay with public radio? And I realized without the big voice, I'd probably never make it in commercial radio. And also, by that time, I was really hooked on public radio. Now, I didn't know where I was going to go, but I knew that something else was going on. There was a lot of freedom. There was a lot of caring people. There were a lot of people who were interested in social things and in cultural things. And the ability to, I mean, when I got into NPR, I was very, very young.
Did you ever find that there was initially a period when the network was still young and when a lot of people hadn't heard of public radio, that media professionals from commercial media would think of you as going off and playing in a little sandbox every day and, you know, kind of playing radio and not really doing serious radio?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. But, oh, I remember that you'd get on the phone and you'd want to get a guest and you'd say, I'm Jay Kearns from National Public Radio. Well, it's like PBS with pictures. You know, public television, well, there it's sort of got this less endowed younger brother or sister that, yeah, it's just like that. And we sort of do the same kind of programs, and of course we didn't, but I mean, it has come to a point where you can get on the phone and say NPR or public radio, and it means so much at this point to the life of the country that I'm glad I stayed in it this long so I could, you know, and at least enjoy the recognition that public radio, you know, has achieved.
There's an old expression that show business gets in your blood, and once you start in it, you don't really leave. Do you feel that way about radio? I know you have a lot of friends who've left public radio for other forms of media and who've left public radio for network TV. Do you think you would feel comfortable leaving radio? Do you love radio too much to leave it?
I think so. I have, you know, that it is no secret at National Public Radio that, yeah, I had lunch with Ed Fooey and Roger Mudd of American Almanac, and I went up to West 57th Street. And the reason is because the producer said, we listen to Morning Edition, and we want some of that on our air. But of course, you cannot get into television unless you've been in television, and all I've done ever is radio. I've done no TV, and so I'll never be in TV. And the message there to me, I suppose, is that, hey, kid, you're supposed to be in radio, and you'll probably be in radio. Although I imagine my kids one day, I don't have kids yet, but I imagine them or grandkids will say, oh, you were in radio. What was that like when there is no longer radio? There's like laser beam that carries the message. When radio was something that used to be because there's no more public transportation because of Graham Rudman or something, which happened back in the 80s. And radio doesn't exist. It must be an Italian thing I can do to hex that or something. But anyway, I imagine my grandkids saying, compressing all of radio at one time and saying, what was it like being there with Jack Benny? You know, what was it like being there with George Burns? That everyone in radio, history will compress, so everyone in radio was there for that blip on the chart. And we were all there doing you know, the shadow together. And we were all there with Wells. And
but do you really think, though, that, you know, radio will become extinct, either because of television or some other far-flung technology that we don't even know about yet?
No, I don't worry about that. I worry about people losing the ability to listen, though. I mean, you go to Europe and radio is loved and people listen to the radio like they'd watch TV. They sit down and don't do anything else. They turn on the radio and they sit around and listen. And I worry that people do not know how to listen and get information from music and from information.
Well, tell me this. Do you ever think to yourself, here I am driving myself absolutely crazy doing this program, worrying about the details and the pacing and this edit and the music, just about every single detail of it. And then knowing that people are listening first thing in the morning when they're really groggy, they're like half conscious.
No, I have to tell you two things. One thing is, I have never received fan mail like this for the, you know, Weekend Edition is on in other cities before March 1st, before it goes on WHYY. And the fan mail is the best I have ever received on anything I have ever done. So that's great. I mean, the listeners are right there with us. We expect mail from Philadelphia the same way as we get it from Chicago, New York. The second thing is, when I was a kid and I dreamed what it would be like to work professionally in anything, I never dreamed this big. I grew up in a small town in New Jersey. I never dreamed this big. So beyond like 1975, this has all been gravy. This has all been way beyond my wildest expectations. So to be able to do this, that is why certain people who, you know, may be burned out or tired or resent their work because they really haven't moved around or moved up, and there are people at any place, you know, like that, they resent it because they know I'm having the time of my life. And they see it. I sing in the hallways. I love working on each piece of tape. I could sit and make splices and write scripts all day and listen to interviews. No, this is all far beyond my dreams.
But really, though, does it ever get to you when you think, for the listeners, it's just a radio show? They're like going to tune it on and they expect it to be good and they expect it to be
there. That's the thing about being in public radio, though. The listeners tell you, this means to us. The letters come in and you know, you get this kind of mail. They say to you, you have touched my life. You have made a difference in my life. You are part of my life. You feel there is a great responsibility. You feel accountable to these listeners. I mean, it's a sad thing to say. You can get 40 great pieces of mail. Listeners love what you've done, and then one person dislikes something, and you discount the 40 because that one person just didn't like it. You feel, oh, I owe that person. I have done bad. I owe that person a better show next week. That's I know that sounds awfully odd, but we read every single piece of mail that comes in. We take the phone calls very, very seriously. Because public radio listeners pay for this service, you feel very responsible to them. And you feel very connected. It's not like they're calling up and winning Chevrolets, you know? It's not like they're calling up and guessing pop tunes and listening to rock and roll. We are, you know, I just heard a tape at this station here today of Family Matters. Is that the program you have on Monday nights? And I heard the people calling up, and you realize this is what public radio is about. There are people who we have become a part of their lives. We have entered these people's homes. They bring us into their bedrooms and their kitchens and their living rooms, and they trust us, and you must never break that trust.
You strike me as someone whose life is very much affected by the work that you're doing. How have you changed your life at all now doing a weekend show that's taking a more reflective look at the week?
I am working harder than I've ever worked on Morning Edition in the first years. This is much more difficult because Morning Edition, you know, was happening fast. You got it on the air. You tried to make it as much depth as you could. This show, you have to take everything that happens and think about it and say, well, what does this mean? What experts can we get? How can we put this in context? This is much harder work. And you have to know so many more things. Also, working with someone like Scott Simon, Scott is like so brilliant. And to keep up with him, I went home last night with about 10 magazines and 7 different newspapers and just started clipping. That's what I do. That's how my life has changed. I mean, I didn't have time to read the newspaper when I did Morning Edition. I read The Wire. Now I have to read that newspaper and learn it and hold it for as many days as I can.
Are you still going to be doing pieces when you were producing Morning Edition? You did a lot of arts pieces.
Well, thank you. I still do a lot of the stuff you hear. I'm doing with Scott. You know, I did a lot of pieces because Bob was doing so much news and we wanted that stuff on the show that I did some more arts pieces. But Scott really has the time to do these pieces. So I'm doing less and less. But it's only because, I don't know, I will be doing pieces. I've done one piece. I did the Kennedy Center Honors winners for Weekend Edition. It was a couple of weeks ago. And there are certain stories that I'm working on now that I said, Scott, do you mind if I do this? And he says, no, not at all. And I have areas of, you know, of special interest, which he doesn't want me to give up.
Okay, well, I wish you the best with the new show. And thank
you
very much for talking with us about it.
Thanks so much.